and when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
It's now over 4 minutes gone. Three points between them, so... And up to Pat O'Connor to determine how much time is left. There's still a few more seconds. Galway need to win this ball. Greg Kennedy comes out for it. There's the final whistle. And Tipperary are the Guinness All-Ireland Hurling Champions for 2001.
So great scenes, Brian, at the final whistle of this one. Nicky English was on the ground hugging the players, and they were all on top of him. And John Lahey, who was out with a cruciate, was out on the pitch hugging lads, and he looked totally emotional, as they say. Because let's be honest, Tip were under pressure here. Like, they hadn't won a Munster title since 93 and an All-Ireland since 91. So 10 years. And, you know, a lot of other teams like Limerick and Clare all doing well in Munster, and the great Tip not doing well.
Yeah, it was hard to believe it was 10 years. And, you know, apart from the 97 appearance, they hadn't been featuring a huge amount, really. And, you know, you mentioned Limerick and Clare and Munster, and obviously Wexford and Offaly and Kilkenny were always thereabouts as well. So I suppose it was tough for them looking at that. And Cork came out nowhere in 99 and won the All-Ireland as well. So, you know, Tipperary hurling folk wouldn't have been overly happy, but they got there in the end. But really, I suppose... they did just about enough, you know. Obviously, they still scored enough to win the All-Ireland 2-18. Not a bad score, but really Galway would be kicking themselves after that first half, kind of poor shooting that really kind of shot them in the foot as the game went on. And, you know, they were very kind of dominant in a huge amount of positions. You know, Tip didn't dominate this game from start to finish, but they still kept Galway at arm's length. It was kind of weird from that perspective.
It was, yeah, and it was a good game. We'll talk about the Galway Wides in part two, because Jesus Christ, the first half was outrageous, some of their shooting. But it was funny looking at the two managers on the sideline, considering 2 weeks ago we did the 1987 final, and now Nicky English and Noel Lane are on the sideline. Do you know what I mean? It always seems to just kind of, the same cycle repeats itself. And do you know the funny thing? Shamie Callanan was out on the pitch in 2001 at halftime doing the mini game. So look, this is just one big cycle that keeps rolling on and rolling on.
and now every young lad dreaming that they'll be that guy eventually as well. Yeah, no, it is. It's mad. And like, Noel Lane had done a good job with that Galway team, you know. And like, it looked like they'd done, like, beating Kilkenny in that All-Ireland semi-final. Like, that was a huge win, because, you know, Kilkenny were turning up. They were All-Ireland champions. It looked like, to all intents and purposes, they were going to destroy Galway. But I think the one moment out of that game was Richie Murray, who was just out of minor. You know, he driving it into Brian McAvoy just before the throw-in. And, you know, it kind of set the stall that the Galway weren't going to be bullied by Kilkenny like they usually were. Right. And Galway all over the field kind of just manned up and were very, very physical against Kilkenny in that All-Ireland semi-final. So that kind of, you know, that would have brought them huge hope going into that All-Ireland. Whereas Tipperary, even though they'd won Munster, you know, they were cruising against Wexford the first day. Then Larry O came on. Larry O'Gorman came on for Wexford and pulled them out of the fire. And, you know, then they did, after the sending off of Brian O'Mara, along, you know, the altercation with Liam Dunn, very harsh, I may add. But, you know, Tipperary took control after that and won that semi-final easily enough against Wexford in the end. Whereas, you know, Brian O'Mara, you know, was out missing for that final.
He missed the final,
it's amazing,
yeah.
You know, and then you obviously have John Lahey being injured. He'd done his cruciate in the first round of Munster. So, you know, Tipperary were short a couple, but, you know, as I said, they just seemed to do enough on the day and keep Galway at arm's length.
Well, Brian O'Mara obviously missed the final, and they were talking about injunctions and things like this, and he did decide against it. But he'd never been sent off in his life before that, and he can't even remember ever getting the yellow card. And then he marks Liam Dunn, and he gets sent off. And like, I mean, it's funny, really, because I was reading about this, and he had broken his ribs playing football in the lead up to that game, and he told Nicky about it, and he was like, you know, this is obviously the semi-final replay. It was played in the rain. In Croker, and he had broken ribs, and he said he never would have gotten into that javelin match with Liam Dunn, only the jabbing Liam was doing was really hurting him. So to protect himself, and he missed the finals. So like, I mean, that is, yeah. Eugene O'Neill replaced him in corner forward and to jiggle things around.
Yeah, it did. And obviously, you know, Lara went out into the wing. Lara himself has always questioned whether he would have been starting in that final. If Brian O'Mara had been available. But look, that's just one man's misfortune, another man's fortune. So, you know, in fairness to Lara, particularly in that second half, he scored a couple of great scores. But, you know, Brian O'Mara was a loss because he was a big player for Tipperary down through the years. And as you said, he always came across as a gentleman, never messing, never pulling dirty or anything like that. And it was a very unfortunate kind of sending off because himself and Liam Dunn, obviously, you know, they were giving each other hands at the hurl and that. But like, probably today, yeah, no, people wouldn't bat an eyelid at them being sent off. But back then, like, you know, it was very, very harsh sending off. And, you know, Wexford tried to help get him off for the final, but unfortunately, he missed that big day. And, you know, for him personally, it was probably one of the real harsh calls or harsh decisions you've seen down through the years for against the player to miss out on such a big day. But, you know, amazingly, Mark O'Leary was the man then that stood up and got a couple of goals. The first one in particular was a brilliant goal.
The first one was an absolutely brilliant goal and a brilliant move. Long ball by Tommy Dunn, who loved giving it in to Declan Ryan. Declan Ryan caught it, and it was Jesus. Like, I mean, he probably would have scored if he put it a foot further into the goals, but he was fairly brave to, now maybe he was just sticking at that side. It was just went inside the, it was unsavable basically. But whatever about that, we'll talk about that maybe in part two, but his second goal was the most bizarre goal I've ever seen. It was almost like it was almost like Crimmins, the Galway goalkeeper, jumped out of the way of it.
Yeah, I'd say he has nightmares over that
what
one.
What was he trying to do?
Yeah, and it was a collection of errors just before that as well, because, you know, Ollie Canning was in there and there was a couple more in there trying to rise the ball. And then Gregory Kennedy seen it kind of bounce and move towards it instead of holding his position and guarding kind of the square. And he went towards the ball and then it just got kicked or booted on past him. And, you know, Mark O'Leary just was coming in the right kind of direction with all the momentum and just flicked it on. And Crimmins, as you said, like, he must have nightmares about that because he really should have smothered that ball and got down low and protected it or, you know, done whatever it needed to be done in that situation. But he done nothing. You know, he just kind of went to flick it real nonchalantly out to the side and got a touch on it. And O'Leary just, you know, it was a real kind of goal out of nothing, really. You know, it was a weird goal, as you said, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Fergal Healy scored a brilliant goal. Fergal Healy's goal and Mark O'Leary's Mark O'Leary's first goal and Fergal Healy's goal were two incredible scores. Fergal Healy was having a nightmare. Cyril Farrell said in the commentary, Galway needs something special. And then Fergal Healy out of nowhere sticks this. Jesus, how did he score from that angle?
Yeah, look, brilliant goal. And he showed savage pace, you know, drove in along the line.
Questionable step.
Yeah, but he's so fast, you're going to get away with it. You know, he was lightning. And he had no choice. Shooting off his left, coming in on that side, you know, coming in along that line. He had nowhere to put it. He was aiming at a postage stamp and put it straight over Cummins' head, and nothing Cummins could do about it. Brilliant, brilliant goal. Like, nowadays, it might be stopped because of helmets or whatever, but Cummins was brave enough to put his own head in front of it. It was just, it actually wasn't so. And there was nowhere else the ball could go, but a brilliant goal. You know, Mark O'Leary's one. You know, as you said, he got it just inside the post. And it was amazing, actually, because of the way he struck the ball, because he kind of struck it, you know, into himself. Whereas if he'd thrown the ball out further and maybe got a strike in it, the trajectory of the ball going across the keeper might have allowed the keeper to get a hurl in it. So it's amazing how it kind of works out, too. He just, the way he struck that ball kind of allowed that the keeper couldn't get to it. It was a brilliant shot.
Yeah, so this was obviously the time there was no pitch invasions again. So the cup was presented out in the middle of the field, which again, you know, I just can't get over that. Yeah, I think this lasted maybe 2 years and then they got rid of it.
Yeah, it was a bit of a disaster. There was a couple of years that were doing that. Like, if memory serves me right, 99 when Cork won.
Yeah, I remember the 99 football, Graham Garrett definitely did it in the middle.
And obviously Kilkenny. And obviously tipped then 2001. And what was weird about 2001 was that it was over towards the Cusick stand side. You know, and it was looking up into the Cusick stand, and it was a bit weird, had a bit of a platform and stuff like that. And, you know, even it was weird seeing the managers kind of patrolling the line on the Cusick stand, and the field had changed its, you know, and had lined up alongside the Cusick stand, whereas we were talking a couple of years ago, where about 97, where there was the big gap. So, you know, it had changed, and there was very little room between the pitch and the actual, where the dugouts were. So, yeah, like that presenting the cup in the middle of the pitch, that was a real disaster altogether. You know, it was, I don't know, it was just a real kind of surreal kind of feeling to that.
Yeah, no, I think it was, but we might as well get the thoughts of Tipperary captain that day, Tommy Dunn, because he joined us on the line now. Tommy, we're talking about you lifting the cup out in the pitch. Was that strange?
No, we didn't really. No, I think about that, those lifting the cup all the time, but it never crosses my mind that I lifted it on the pitch rather than on the stand, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it certainly doesn't, it's not something that ever bothers me, to be honest with you, Colin. Like, in an ideal world, you'd like to be going up into the stand, walking the steps of the Hogan stand as almost every other captain did in history, but at that particular time, it just wasn't possible. You know what I mean? So, but as I say, when the match crosses my mind and the moment crosses my mind every now and then, and it does regularly, it never crosses my mind that I didn't lift it up in the Hogan stand, to be honest.
Right. Okay. Because I was thinking, like, I mean, obviously from Tipperary, if you're dreaming about captaining, you're thinking of looking across the sea of, you know, blue and yellow. You probably did that in the Munster final in Perlis anyway. So it's not like you don't have that memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, like, I do remember there was nearly more controversy at the time about people not being allowed onto the pitch than there was about not being able to get the cup up in the stand. Like, there was a lot of talk in the GAA world at the time at the fact that, you know, Croke Park were coming down heavily on the spectators encroaching onto the pitch, and that didn't fit well with a lot of GAA supporters in particular, you know.
Yeah.
And they were the early years of it. Now it's pretty much commonplace and accepted. But in those years, like, for example, in 1997, when Clare beat us, you know, you remember the influx of Clare people onto the pitch. That was only a few short years before it. But by the time, I think, 2000, 2001 came around, the, you know, spectators onto the pitch was a different ball game altogether, you know. So that was, I remember that much all right. And I remember an aunt and an uncle of mine probably coming close to assaulting a poor security man to try and get onto the field after the match, along with other family members. So you had all that kind of stuff going on, all right?
Right. And I suppose you could do a lap of honour, which was a completely new thing back then as well.
It was. And I remember that. That's a nice memory, actually, taking the cup around with all the Tip supporters still up on Hill 16. So that is a special memory, definitely. You know what I mean? Very, very special. You know, once in a lifetime stuff. So that was wonderful, yeah. And the noise. The one thing about playing in big games, as you'll know yourselves, is the noise is just immense. You know what I mean? And that's one feature, I think, that will never... that I'll never forget, and particularly about that day as well. But even after the match, when you think people would have calmed down a bit, when the cup went down in front of Hill 16, where our supporters were, the noise was just immense, you know. So it's very, very special, yeah.
Yeah. So what's your memories of the game? I thought it was a great game to watch back on. It was a really good standard outside of Galway's shooting, which left a lot to be desired. But there was a good flow to it. Like, I mean, you kept pulling away, but Galway wouldn't let you win it easily.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair little summary of it, in fairness. Yeah, we, like, Galway came into the match after beating Kilkenny in the semi-final, so they came in real good form. We came in after beating Wexford in a replay.
Yeah.
And so, like, there was probably no real standout favourites for the game. I think both teams were fairly evenly matched, and, like, neither of us had won it in a good while, you know what I mean? So so the teams were, it was pretty much a 50-50 game beforehand, but we probably led, I think we led the game pretty much all the way through. Had a good enough first half, and I remember Mark O'Leary scoring a cracker of a goal kind of midway through the first half. So we were playing okay, and more kind of, we were more or less dictating the trend of the game early on, but we were never out of touch, obviously. And there was a stiff enough breeze blowing that day as well, which we had to our advantage in the first half, you know what I mean? So, and I remember at half time, like Galway, like we had maybe 4 or 5 points of a lead going through the first half, coming up towards half time, and then Galway got a good 7 or 8 minute spurt where they closed the gap again right on half time. So Galway going in at half time, Galway were in a good enough position playing with the wind. So I remember we had a few stern words at half time just to kind of really understand that we needed to knuckle down a bit more, in fairness, you know what I mean? So some of the standout things from the game that I remember Declan being very influential at full forward, right? He was a great target man for a big, strong, powerful man.
And well, sorry to cut you off. You definitely noticed that because you gave most of the balls you got into him because lads were working off him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, and in those days, like, the style of play was a lot different than it is now. Like, it was very much a direct style of play. So we were lucky we had someone like him, really, because, like, Owen Kelly was playing that day. I think he started, did he start wing or corner? I think he started corner.
Started in the corner, and Ollie Canning.
Yeah, exactly. And Eugene O'Neill started in the other corner, so... The two lads in the corners, it was a bit like Mick Galloway with his two arms around Peter Stringer and Ronan O'Gara, if you remember that captain, you know what I mean? Like it was a big target man with two handier sized fellas in the corners. But and Declan being very influential, and we got a lot of joy that day out of being direct, high ball and low ball. And in fairness to Owen and Eugene, they were well able to win their own ball as well. But he was like Mark O'Leary got a great goal, I think, off Declan's pass. You know what I mean? So yeah. that was a tactic that was good for us on the day. Absolutely no question.
You got them off to a great start with a brilliant point under the Cusack stand, because I was thinking you settled very well, because I can only imagine the pressure you were under. Like, Tip hadn't won one since 91, and you'd gone through years of watching Clare, you know, kind of dominating Munster. And, like, I mean, I'm sure you must have felt an awful lot of pressure in the lead up to that final.
Yeah, we knew it was very important for this team, and like we very much in, like, this was an era where the traditional teams were struggling for a foothold, if you like. So you had, like, Wexford were champions in 96, Offaly were champions in 98, okay, Cork won it in 99, Kilkenny won it in 2000,
Kilkenny,
but, like, Kilkenny weren't dominating anything like they were later on in the decade, if you know what I mean. Offaly were very strong, Wexford were very strong, Limerick incredibly strong, Clare obviously still very strong. We only beat Clare in the first round in 2001 by a single point in a knockout game down in Portree Creek. So Waterford, like, we bet Waterford in Munster final in 2000. So we weren't the Tips and the Kilkennys and Corks, like, we weren't getting it all our own way. Like, it was very, very even around those times. So there was pressure from that point of view. Tip hadn't won a senior All-Ireland since 1991. And as well as that, this was Nicky was manager with Jack Bergen and Ken Hogan. This was their third year in charge. So there was a bit of pressure on from that point of view as well. But the team was fairly well established. So it was time to make a move for that team. You know what I mean? Like, I was 27 that year. Brian O'Mara, 28. You know what I mean? So we were getting to the stage where it was time. It was, if we were going to win it, it kind of really had to be. It really had to be at that time.
Yeah.
And so we definitely understood that. And but I do remember there was a lot of maturity in the team, a good bit of experience, and we were fairly composed going out onto the pitch. We understood what was going on, and that match went on, I'd say it could have been 4 or 5 minutes on the clock before the first score happened. You know what I mean? So it was a bit of a game of cat and mouse. And loads and loads of people still bring up that first score under the Cusack stand, which is really nice. And even Nicky, actually, I think the match was on telly there recently, so Nicky must have been watching it, and he said he still remembers that. He said he couldn't see it when I hit the ball because the sun was in his eyes, but he heard the sound off the hurley, and he knew it was right. I was very close to him when I hit it. He said he knew by the sound off the hurley it was good. So it was a great start, and really, really gave me enormous belief and confidence for the rest of the day, to be honest.
Right. I was thinking, like, this 2001 team was almost your third kind of team with Tipperary, even though you were 27, like you said, because you came on to the end in 93, onto the end of that great Tip team. Then 97, it had changed a bit. And this 2001 team was dramatically changed then again, even from 97.
That's right, yeah. Well, absolutely. That's a really important point, because like Nicky became manager in 99. Waterford had knocked us out of the championship in 1998. Knockout, first round knockouts were gone. So there was that was Lynn Gaynor's second year, and there was a change then at that stage. And Nicky came in and really, really revitalized and refreshed and almost reset the way Tip prepared. I think in terms of preparation, we just went to another level. We started to get to know much more about gym preparation, much more about general conditioning, real hard work over the winter. Like, we, you know, for the 99 championship, like, we were in unbelievable shape. And I firmly believe that the 2001 success came on the back of the work the team had done through 99 and 2000. You know what I mean? Both our physical work, our mental and psychological work, and just the experience that we gained. So a lot of the guys that played in 2001, for example, Paul Ormond, Philip Maher, David Kennedy, Paul Kelly, John Carroll, like Eugene O'Neill. Eugene kind of came through the underage system all right, but a few others didn't, that Nicky just kind of plucked them. Right. And saw some. Lara Corbett, a very young player at the time. Owen Kelly was very well known anyway, but still quite young. So you're right, the team was a completely new team from 1997. You know, I mean, we'd lost, you know, a lot of great players had come to their natural end between 97 and 2001. You think of Michael Ryan, Mick Ryan, Colin Bonner, Cornel Bonner, Declan Carr, all those kind of players that had Michael Cleary, extensive experience and success with Tip. So it was effectively a new team, you know, myself and Brian O'Mara and Declan. And like, Declan won his third All-Ireland that day in over three different decades, you know what I mean, which is often forgotten, but an absolutely incredible achievement. Like, he won 89, 91 and 2001. So that's a huge achievement, to be honest with you. So, yeah. So it was a new enough team, but it was a nice sprinkling of fellas that had been there a few years as well, you know.
I think probably Laren Owen Kelly were the little bit of magic dust in 2001, though. I think Owen had played a game in 2000, a qualifier game, but like, that was their first season, the two of them. Yeah. And like, I mean, we know the players they became. So, you know, like, I mean, it's no secret that year coincided with you winning the league and All-Ireland double.
That's true. Like, Owen and Larry gave us a new dimension up front. You know what I mean? Like, they were, like, they had pace, they had scoring ability, they were a bit unorthodox. And they just did give us another dimension that we needed, you know what I mean? And it fitted nicely, because the team outside of that was fairly well established, you know what I mean? And were fit, you know, had been through the ringer both good and bad days, and kind of understood what needed. So the lads came in with little or no experience, and they just blended in lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't think in 2001 it would be 2008 before Tip would win another Munster even.
Yeah, well, no, you don't. Of course, you don't think like that. But at the same time, you don't think, you know, you don't ever take it for granted. Like I've lost four Munster finals, Colin. You know, sorry, five Munster finals. So I could write the book on losing Munster finals for you if you like. You know what I mean? So I'd never, I would in Munster, and Leinster is the same now. That you just, and in those days it was still, the first round was knockout. You know what I mean? So you could it was just chaos. You know what I mean? If you were any bit off colour at all on the first day, you'd be gone, whether you were All-Ireland champions or not. Do you know what I mean?
For a year.
But you're right. Like 2001 to 2008 was an incredibly long time to wait to even be in a Munster final, you know?
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Kamir, here's a question I want to ask you before I let you go, because you're obviously into coaching now, and we're looking back over all these All-Irelands, and it strikes me like the ground hurling obviously has gone out of the game, and like, I mean, you can see why, because it can be very risky. But then I was talking last week to Cyril Farrell about, like, is there not a place in the modern game for ground hurling, maybe in the half forward line, where, you know, if you give it in fast, it's not as risky. You know, you mightn't be given it. You see corner backs back in the day doing it, and it could go straight to a half forward and it's over the bar, you know, which seems mad.
No, I know.
Would there not be a place sometimes for half forwards just to keep it moving on in?
I wish I could say that. There is, or there was, or and maybe, and who am I to say? I just give you my opinion. I don't know. Like, the game now, as I see it, from where I look at it now, and the way the game is, and you know, the strength of your own team, and obviously the strength of your opposition. And the game now is all about possession. You know what I mean? It's all about possession and what you do with possession. So the less risks you have to take in possession, the better off you're likely to be. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
ground hurling by its nature is risky. You know what I mean? Because you're not, maybe not as pinpoint as you would be with the ball in your hand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, if you were to ask any inside forward, like, what way do you want the ball? Probably, or very close to the top of the list, they'll say, I just want it quick. I just, give me a quick ball. I don't mind what way it comes, but I just want it quick. And in the older days, that was fine. But in the older days, you didn't have a screening player, you didn't have a sweeper all the much. You know what I mean? There was lots of matches where you'll find there was a ton of space. There could have been 40 yards between the fullback and the centre back, and nobody in there. So any sort of a quick ball into that space for an inside forward was heaven. Whereas now, all generally speaking, all those spaces are filled most of the time. So, I mean, you have to be precise about where you're putting the ball when you're attacking. That's the way I would see it now. And therefore the ground hurling part of it is, you know, very much almost disappeared, you could say. Now, there's still, you know, it's still lovely to see first-time hurling, first-time striking. There's nothing as good as it. But like, you've no idea where the ball is going to end up.
No.
If you double on a couple of them, you might have your inside forward after making a diagonal run 30 yards with the hope of getting it, and the ball has gone into the space he's just left. You know what I mean? So, so look, the game has changed in some ways, and then in other ways it hasn't changed at all, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's no, that makes sense, because you're giving diagonal balls in now to beat the sweeper and things like that. They're all going on the outside of the forward, aren't they? Rather than, you know, along the ground.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest changes I've noticed, is that like trying my career in midfield out of hitting balls out of my hand, I wasn't looking half the time where they went. You know what I mean? I knew that I could get them in or around where they should be, but now it's a good bit more. You have to be a little bit more precise in where you want to put them, because teams are just defending a lot better and defending with in a more tactical manner. You know, do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think you know if you keep putting the ball in into the wrong place, then you're going to get hurt, and you're going to get hurt badly off counter attacks. Actually, you know that's where a lot of damage is done. The teams that actually win the ball deep in their own defence are so good at bringing it back out quickly that, you know, they can hurt you straight off that ball. You know.
Right. Come here, another one before I let you go is a nice little one. I saw Liam Sheedy saying that Shane McCallinan was out on the field in the 2001 All-Ireland final playing the mini game at half time. So that's a good one.
Yeah. Wow, that's brilliant. Yeah, that's a great story, actually. It's a great story, and it just, that's really where it's at, isn't it? The children of today are the superstars of tomorrow, and it doesn't take that long for it to happen. That's a lovely story. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's not a cliche for no reason. Come here, Tommy, thanks very much for taking the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Colin. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk. I don't get to do it that often.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park. The same year. You can't touch this. And there would have been hockey. But the camera went in. There was a fellow warming up. Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, the fuck. He was massive. Legs, arse, built. But I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you can't touch this. Look at my eyes.
Okay, so Tipperary 2-18, Galway 2-15, and I suppose the first tactical kind of move was by Galway to put Joe Rabbit into corner forward, and he put him in on Ormond, so they obviously thought they would be able to get a little bit of change out of that. Alan Cairns came out into the wing, Brian.
Yeah, and Paul Ormond, did shade it eventually, he was very physical and always was very physical, and played on the line and well above it at times. I only marked him a couple of times, but I hated every second of it. And probably what summed him up, and he'd been delighted with this. Richie Murray won a free solo and through, and the play was, the whistle had stopped or had blown, and all the play had stopped. But he came and he met Richie Murray with shoulder and sickened him. And Richie Murray was down getting treatment because he didn't expect it at all. But
after the referee blew his whistle, he got him late, didn't he?
Yeah, he got him very. That's what I'm saying. That summed up Paul Ormond. He made no excuse for that. That's the type of player he was, and but he'd have been delighted with it. But he got away with it completely. Didn't get a yellow card, and the amount of times the camera shows Eugene Cloonan getting annoyed with him, Joe Rabbit getting annoyed with him, was pulling and dragging and driving lads queer, but he kind of got away with it, as I said, to a point, because he didn't get yellow carded, and then Joe Rabbit got pulled for steps a couple of times, which I thought were extremely harsh, and he was really starting to frustrate him as the match wore on. But Alan Curran's then gone out in the wing. He really troubled Paul Kelly, and it was just poor shooting from Alan that stopped him from really kind of making hay, because he had a couple of really simple chances in that first half in particular.
He had. It was desperate altogether, his two misses. Yeah. And he actually missed the goal too. It was a poor enough effort straight at Brendan.
Yeah, straight coming to the strong side as well.
Yeah, the Clunan got it from. But we'll talk about the Galway Wides in a second, but I just thought there was a contrast between Joe Rabbit and Declan Ryan, right? Two big men, experienced men. And, Joe Rabbit just not throwing it around the same way Declan Ryan was able to throw it around. He winning a good bit of ball, but sometimes, trying to take too much out of it or getting swallowed up. Whereas Declan Ryan was just kind of knew he was there as a target man, was never doing anything too fancy and was just throwing it off, getting other lads into the game.
Yeah, total, obviously, different mindset. There still would have been a few years between them. Joe Rabbit was still 31, still would have fancied himself that he was offering a lot more than just being a target man. But, it didn't kind of work out for him on the day. As I said, I just think it was harsh enough. He got a point in the first half. He got maybe one free for being, tackled and being held up. But there was a couple of other occasions I thought where he could have bought frees, only for he was such a big man he probably didn't win them. But you're right, Declan Ryan maximised every possession he got. He got a good score. Well, barred a goal miss, obviously. He went for big time.
Did you put your house on him getting that, wouldn't you?
You would definitely, especially off the left, but he hit it so fast. He did the right thing hitting it fast and not carrying the ball, but obviously, he nearly killed the poor slitter, the young lad that was collecting the slitters behind the goal, and the umpire were diving out of the way as well. But As you said, you would have put your house in it. But, you know, he probably knew his role a little bit better. You know, he usually had Lar Corbett and Owen Kelly either side of him, so he would have been, you know, winning ball. You know, these boys would have been buzzing around him, and they'd been, you know, offloading to them. So that's probably the role he was playing all season, whereas Joe Rabbit obviously was more used to playing on the half-forward line, catching ball, you know, catching puckouts and scoring, where, you know, it was a total different role in the All-Ireland. So
right,
I wouldn't be overly critical of him from that perspective. I just think, you know, Paul Arman's physicality and the way the match referee won out on the day.
Right, right. So Alan Cairns had that first miss, right? And then Clunan had a terrible miss. Both of them disputed the thought they were points. They obviously weren't. But it showed a little bit of desperation that they both kind of, you know, out of hope maybe, or maybe they thought they were points. Hodgins had a bad wide. Richie Murray had a wide on the run in front of the goals. Fergal Healy had a bad wide. Then Alan Cairns had his second wide where he cut back in on his left, straight in front of the goals and missed it. Derek Hardyman had a miss from play where he nearly got up to the 45 and put it wide. Richie Murray had another wide from about the 45. This was incredible, and there's no way of explaining this outside of maybe nerves on the big day, because it didn't stop in the second half. Even Kevin Broderick had a bad wide. Fergal Healy hit the post twice, which for two really, really easy scores. And, like, I mean, it just didn't seem to end for Galway the whole game. Like, I mean, Tipperary were always ahead in this game, but it was a complete 50-50 based on the balance of play.
Oh, 100%. Like, Galway should have been leading, particularly in the first half. And you just referenced Fergal Healy's two ones. I've never seen it like it. He hit the right post and then he hit the left post. You know, talk about your luck not being in. And like, he still got 1-2. His man was taken off. He couldn't have done much more in terms of a corner forward. But, you know, still he could have come off the field there at 1-4, 1-5 easily. Maybe allow him a one wide. But,
Jeez, there were easy ones. The ones he hit were easy ones.
Yeah, like I suppose the very first one from Alan Curran's kind of nearly set the scene. You know, you're 23, 4 yards out, almost straight in front of the goal. You just tap it over the bar, and, you know, he had a poor miss. And as you said, then beautiful sidestep, you know, completely sold him, brought it back on the left. You'd be expecting to hit it, you know, all day long. But sometimes I find, Woolley, that you're better off actually hitting that ball on the run. Even though you've sold him with the sidestep, hitting the ball from a standing position, you don't actually do it that often in hurling. And can be a little bit harder to score those ones.
You tend to pull those ones.
Yeah, you do. You tend to pull them. So, like, I know I've often done it myself, you know, and you just go to yourself, oh, yeah, come on now, next time, move your feet, get on the run, 1-2, yeah. You don't have to go running 5-6 yards, just get on your feet and hit the ball on the front foot, which you're used to doing, you know, automatically. So, yeah, that's definitely one where he maybe should have just moved his feet a little bit. You know, like, still you go back to it, as I said, bar Paul Ormond, I still thought the Galway forwards were shading nearly all their positions. You know, Paul Kelly, I've never, ever seen him as poor.
Very quiet,
as I did in that game. You know, he threw it up in crowds, he tapped the ball out over the sideline where he'd miscontrolled it, and, you know, Kevin Broderick gave him a run around, and then, you know, Alan Kearns was winning possession off him and should have had points off him as well. And just thought, you know, he was very poor. David Kennedy and himself and Mark Kearns didn't really do much for long stages, but then Mark Kearns pipped him for a couple of points. Aidan Corcoran was under serious pressure with Kevin Broderick. Philip Maher, you know, he probably was keeping Clunan reasonably quiet.
Yeah, I think Philip Maher got the better of Clunan over the whole game.
Probably over the course of the game, yeah. Look, still Clunan got him for 1-1 in the first half, but they didn't get a huge amount of ball between them, but still probably Philly Maher came out with a couple that, you know, big moments maybe in the second half. But, you know, he didn't, we can't say he wiped them out either, you know, and Thomas Costello, as I said, was still under pressure from Fergal Healy. So still you're looking at 5 out of 6 positions Galway are winning, And still they don't win in Ireland.
Yeah, but whose fault is that? Like, I mean, you can't even use, like, they had 20 scoring chances to Tip's 13. Like, I mean, Tip had some lovely classy scores. Tommy Dunn had 2. His first one was a classic. John Carroll had a lovely solo point where he caught a puck out and stuck it over. Owen Kelly caught a puck out and stuck it over. They were just so much more efficient. Like, I mean, and that's not to say, you know, like, I mean, scoring is a skill too. There's no point in breaking even and putting them wide. You know, Tipperary were just, even though the balance of play was 50-50, Tipperary were a better team because they were able to score and Galway weren't.
Yeah, look, Cody always says, you know, the best team always wins at Ireland because the best team scores the most. You know, it doesn't matter about possession or how it maybe looked or felt that one team was dominating another. You still have to score the most. You know, and Tipperary, as you said, done that. And, you know, we're able to do it more efficiently, as you said. And you've referenced all those scores. And even go back to Larry Corbett's 2 points, the very first one, just thrown out to him. You know, he was buzzing around, but he wasn't having a huge influence on the game. First chance, straight in front of the goal, bang, point. You know, he was under pressure striking that as well. And then the second one was an awful mistake by David Tierney. Yeah. You know, all the time in the world, got caught in possession, tried to, you know, without take it in the hand, play it off the hurl, rise it and strike it, and got caught doing that. And, you know, Lar snipes it off him, makes a mess of the rise up, and has enough, you know, obviously so fast, has enough time to get the ball, you know, up the second time, and, you know, gets a good score. But, you know, when, as you said, when you see the Tipperary forwards, while not hurling or dominating their positions, they were all scoring, and they were making sure they were scoring. And I think you hit the nail on the head with Tommy Dunn. Great leadership. You know, Galway had started better, and next minute gets a worldy of a point out on the Cusick stand side, out on the sideline off his left hand side, and then gets another great score from play off his right side and hits the 65s. Actually, speaking of 65s, he was good at robbing, you know, a foot or two. Even the very last one he hit there late in the game, he was a good yard forward. We're used to seeing that maybe in the 80s, early 90s, but that had nearly gone out of the game completely, even by 2001, that you might borrow that yard. But, you know, now, obviously, they really enforce that rule that it has to be behind the 65.
Right. I didn't notice him doing that now. I wasn't looking out for that at all. One thing I was wondering, I know I mentioned John Carroll scored that great catch from a puck out, but I noticed John Carroll at centre forward, a lot of puck outs went to him, and he generally wasn't trying to catch it. He was just trying to double on it with the hurl. Would that have been a tactic to just double it on into Declan Ryan and have lads running off him?
Yeah, definitely. It would have been...
Did you notice Carroll doing that?
Yeah. No, and that would have, like, look, he's usually very strong in the air, but that would have been a tactic for maybe the likes of Lara Corbett and Mark O'Leary, or even the two corner forwards breaking onto that ball. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what we were talking about, overhead pulling and ground hurling. It's about turning the half back line back towards their own goal and not allowing them to be that platform or that wall that the half back line want to be. Whereas, you know, Tipperary obviously felt today that a lot of speed, a lot of runners, and with getting quick ball inside would have been a good tactic. You know, Lara out there, Mark O'Leary breaking onto that ball, Owen Kelly buzzing around. But Owen Kelly was having a right back volley Canning. You know, Canning was, I thought, was brilliant. You know, Kelly got a brilliant score, but it needed to be a brilliant score to get one off Ollie Canning.
Yeah, no, okay. Well, I thought Owen Kelly played well, though. He's only 19. Like, I mean, he got that point from play. He put one on a plate for Lara. It was him that threw that one out. And he put one on a plate for, I think, one of the subs that came on. His name is escaping me here.
Paddy O'Brien, yeah.
Paddy O'Brien, yeah.
He's the current physio with Tipperary, yeah.
Threw one out to him as well. So, like, I mean, he was influential and scored 6 points from frees, you know, for a 19-year-old.
For a young man.
Yeah, and it's, I tell you, he was a skinnier sort of fella. He must have did a lot of work on his legs because we know how stocky and you know, well-built he was towards the end. His legs didn't look anywhere like that in that final, did they?
His legs were always massive. That's like, maybe you're right with the weights or whatever over the years.
Yeah.
But, like... One never struck me as one that was a huge man for squatting now or deadlifting, but to tell you a story, I remember watching him and Tony Forrestal under 14, and we played them, so under 14, it would be 1996, it was the year down in Waterford, we played them, and I just remember seeing him in the final. We played them in the group stage, but they got to the final against Kilkenny and we went to see it. And I remember seeing him accepting the cup, and his calves were huge and he had big hairy legs for a 13, 14-year-old. And everyone was in awe of this chap. It was like, who is that guy? Everyone was like, watch out for him. His legs were massive. His calves were massive. And like, needless to say, he obviously went on to be unbelievable for Tip there, particularly during the mid-noughties when Tip actually were at their lowest ebb. His legs were always huge. So, yeah, look, 19, it's a tough ask, you know, because he was after being in there in 2000 and he was still minor, and Nicky English sprung him as a number 16 in the All-Ireland quarter-final.
Yeah, I was reading that.
You know, he had the two jerseys up, you know, and then he obviously came on out the field and got his pint first touch of the ball. So that just shows you the talent that Owen Kelly was.
Yeah, he was one of the all time greats. The what about Broderick's disallowed goal? Oh, we'll wait for that for a second. So when Healy gets that goal, Galway are only a point down. It's 2:13 to 2:12, and there's 10 minutes to go. And you would imagine the momentum is with them then. But from the very next puck out, Mark O'Leary won one of the softest frees I've ever seen. Now there's two in it. Then Mark O'Leary scores a wonder point from out under the Cusick stand. Now there's three in it. And for me, that was game over at that stage then. I couldn't see Galway trying to claw, you know, another goal back.
Yeah, I thought, look, being honest, if I was a Galway fan, I wouldn't have been happy with Pat Connor that day. I don't think he rode him, but I just don't think... I think Tipperary got a couple of frees handier. I think, as I said, Tacho Rabbit was harshly done by a couple of times where he was being really physically manhandled, but he was done for overcarrying. And, you know, there was a couple of times that, you know, I just thought Tipperary got the rub of the green. I think that Mark O'Leary one is one you're talking about as well. Even the very last free, even though John Carroll eventually got the point on the second attempt, didn't know where the free in was, being honest. I just thought Pat Connor was, you know, you could hear the crowd starting to get at him and get annoyed with him, particularly in that second half. And as you said, moving on to that, Kevin Broderick disallowed free. Like, God, I thought that was very harsh. I don't think you'd seen that given. Now, in fairness to Pat Connor, he was right beside it. He was 3 or 4 yards away. As far as he had seen it, that David Kennedy was dragged down. But I thought David Kennedy knew what he was at and he knew he was under pressure and kind of maybe half stumbled in the tackle and made sure he went down. Was Broderick going to score a goal from there, though? I don't know, because the players beside him, Philip Marr stopped,
yeah.
You know, and look, Cummins was trying to make sure he didn't score. He was kind of in that kind of frame anyway, even though the whistle was gone and going to stop you. And then, you know, it's kind of a weird one. I don't know. I don't think that goal would have come anyway.
I think you're right, but I think Kennedy wasn't getting to Broderick. He might have even...
It was a
soft enough foul, but Kennedy wasn't making that... Broderick had nipped in ahead of him anyway.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It was unfair to give that free. Now, obviously, Philip Marr completely stopped and Broderick just ran unchallenged that goal. So there's no way of ever knowing that. But Cummins made a brilliant save from Broderick. Just when you think about Broderick, he could have had it 1-6 from play because he had a terrible wide... on the day. We'll talk about his performance of the weekend, but Cummins came out very, very quickly to make that save, in fairness to him.
I'd forgotten how big a save that was in such a moment. 3 points in it, you know, a couple, you know, 3 or 4 minutes left, and a brilliant save because, you know, come out and smother it. It's like, you know, it's stark contrast to what Crimmins did at the other end. You know, he came out, was very brave. There wasn't much Broderick could do, but just try and get his strike off as quick as he can because Paul Ormond was making up the ground. So, you know, Broderick did the right thing. He'd probably still be annoyed about it because when you're in those situations as a forward and you know that yourself, well, you're more annoyed that you missed. No matter what way a back defends it or a goalie defends it, you're still annoyed that you didn't score it. So, but still, it was brilliant comments. And then when it, you know, the ball popped up in the air and Broderick tries to swing it with one hand and hits it wide, you know, look, obviously he was trying to do something audacious, but maybe he could have left it because Clunan was coming in on the follow-up. You never know what could have happened. So it's just, look, sometimes when your luck is out, it's just out.
Yeah, I think Galway look back on that and say, Jesus, that would talk about one that got away. You know, like, I mean,
definitely,
I suppose,
yeah.
But like, definitely over the course. Although when you look at it, Declan Ryan was a bit wasteful in the second half. He missed that goal and he missed another couple of easy point chances as well. So like, you know, over the course of the game, I thought it was a very, very, very 50-50 game. You know, at the end of the day, Tipperary were more efficient and they won the game. I wanted to talk about Nicky English because that was actually his third year in as tip manager. And the first 2 years, he hadn't won anything. Well, he had won a league. He'd won nothing in the championship. And he was trying to build a team, like I was mentioning with Tommy Dunn. It was Tommy Dunn's third team because Tommy Dunn came in 93. You know, and that great team. Yeah. Then 97 was another team because Tommy Dunn won an under-21 in 95. And, you know, there would have been a turnover to 97. And then in 2001, it was practically a completely different team. Some of the minors from 96 on it, then Lahr and Owen Kelly. But like Tommy was saying, pulled other lads kind of out of nowhere.
Hmm. Yeah, like, you know, you're talking about Thomas Costello there and probably Paul Ormond, the likes of those really coming out of nowhere. And yeah, look, like Nicky was clever. He the players were very fond of him and very, you know, complimentary towards the way he managed the side. They trained hard, obviously, and they did a lot of skills work and they seemed to enjoy their hurling. But he knew when to down tools as well, and the boys maybe went off and maybe had a bonding session or that. So, you know, he united them, which is probably... It's not too bad, probably in the way current setups are at the moment. They're so used to being together, but you know back then that was a big thing, trying to get the likes of Tipperary to make sure that they're united and all pulling the one way. So Nicky certainly did that. And look, essentially the likes of Tipperary, there was massive pressure on to try and win that at Ireland because they certainly were good enough. But you know he done it and he backed their players because you know Lar Corbett. Like Owen Kelly probably speaks himself, but you know, getting the performance out of Lar like that, you know, Mark O'Leary with 2-1 in the final, you know, he certainly did allow players to express themselves and you know, get the best out of him. He just the strong midfield then as well, though. You know, Tommy Dunn obviously was excellent, but at the end, right, hurled a lot of ball. It was a bit wasteful actually with yeah. the ball, but
played well.
You know, but played well. Yeah, they like their midfield definitely dominated from that perspective, you know.
Yeah,
but, he,
yeah.
but look, Nicky was. Not afraid to make changes either, you know, because, you know, let's bear in mind that we're down Brian O'Mara for that All-Ireland, as I said, John Lattie gone for the whole year, but, you know, Paul Kelly wasn't hurling well, as good as he was, you know, he was whipped, do you know what I mean? Like, he was just gone, Thomas Costello under pressure, gone, do you know, so, Nicky wasn't afraid to make changes, you know, I seen Ken Hogan there as a selector there on the sideline as well, so, they made changes when they needed to be, and look, they did enough, they're immortalised now in Tipperary.
Exactly, and 2001 obviously won the league that year too, so did a full clean yep. sweep of everything that they could have won and didn't win another Munster until 2008. Mad that they went 7 years then. You would have thought with the age profile of that team that they'd be around Ohio.
Yeah, that seems to be a big problem for Tipperary, doesn't it? You know, like,
yeah.
it was 2010, as you said, that they didn't come back and win the All-Ireland again. And even that team, with that age profile, you expected them to really dominate.
As well, yeah.
Under 21, I learned 6 days later, and you thought, Tipper here, and they're going to dominate. But who stopped them on both occasions? The Cats, the Black and Amber Cats. So, you know, in 2002, you know, that brilliant game, I learned semi-final. Wasn't that the game where Jimmy Coogan scored the goal where DJ set it up to beat Tipperary?
Oh, he's right. They were beaten in the Munster final by Waterford, though. Surprised yeah. that year, weren't they?
That's right, yeah. But the All-Ireland semi-final,
right.
real tight, tense game. DJ, moment of magic, looked like he was going to shoot, but then saw Jimmy Coogan and a brilliant finish. And, you know, that was the difference that day when Kilkenny, you know, stopped them, you know. And that kind of, that Tipperary team then kind of broke apart. I suppose some of the older players started to drift away. And you know, it took them a while, but I suppose it was the emergence of Waterford, as you said, in that Munster final, and that Cork team re-energised themselves after their strike, and
Nicky took over then. I suppose yeah. as well, which was a big thing when they all, you know, rated him so highly. Right, we'll come back in and we'll do a performance of the weekend.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in the air. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. But it's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
Okay, so performance of the weekend. I'm going to start off with Mark O'Leary. Like, I mean, when you look at it, 2-1 in an All-Ireland final, and vitally he won that free. Soft and all as it was, he still won it. And that put 2 in it, and his point came then to put 3 in it at a really important time in the game. And his 2 goals, you know, stretched Tipperary's lead out. So you're going to have to make a very good case to me, for anybody else, to get, based on 2 goals and a point, out of 218, you know, like, I mean,
yeah.
It was a brilliant performance, even though, if we're being honest, he gave a great ball in to, I think it was Declan Ryan in the first half. The man wasn't in the game all that much. It's not like this fella, it was like Tommy Dunn, for example, who was orchestrating things and was on the ball a lot. He scored 2-1 and won that free and didn't do a hell of a lot more outside of that. Why do you need to do any more outside of it?
I think that's a brilliant summary of actually his performance, being honest. No, you're right, because he didn't hurl a world of ball, but 2-1. What more of a return do you want in a big day? And wasn't a man for scoring a lot of goals. And the first one was top drawer. You know, geez, he must actually think of that regularly. Think what a cracker that was. The second one should have been stopped, but still, he was there at the right time, right place. As I said, sometimes you need a bit of luck and a bit of fate going your way. And his point from play was brilliant.
Yeah.
So out on the sideline, on the 21, big score, you know, considering we've talked at length about the Galway misses, you know, that was a man that was obviously, confidence was up and nailed that one. So, no, I agree with you. I think his performance was massive. Absolutely maximised every single ball he got. And as you said, what more do you want on the big day?
Exactly. So Tommy Dunn got 5 points in total, 2 from play in the first half when they were needed, and 3 6-12. And to be fair, you say he robbed a few yards. He never looks like he was going to miss any of those 65.
No.
When Tommy Dunn had the ball, I'd say Tipperary fans could just kind of relax and kind of know that, right, something good is going to be done here. There's no need to panic.
No, beautiful striker of the ball, you know.
Yeah.
Particularly, obviously, and he's right, yeah, brilliant free taker and, you know, showed great leadership, as I said. You know, a couple of great scores in that first half when Galway, as you said, were doing all the hurling, but Tipperary were doing the scoring, and it's what matters. And I think him in particular hurled a huge amount of ball in middle of the field. Big performance, real captain's performance. You know, as he obviously was one of the older hurlers on the field that day from a Tipperary perspective, but really stood up when they needed him, and a brilliant performance.
Yeah, not that old, you know, like only 27. You know, he'd still...
Jeez, that's amazing too. You think he's older, yeah.
He'd been around so long, you would have think he's older, but like, I mean, just a real Rolls Royce of a player, the way he carried himself on the field, you know, and the way he, when he was on the ball, like even some of the ball, I was saying to him there when I was talking to him, he's always looking for Declan Ryan. And like, but that's just smart. Like Declan Ryan is just going to throw it around to the younger lads, you know, so it made sense for him to do that. But he was always looking for him, no matter whether it was high or low, he was looking for Declan Ryan. And sure, he obviously just trusted Declan Ryan, who probably warrants a mention in this as well, definitely based off his first half performance.
Yeah, definitely. And what I liked about Tommy is, look, brilliant striker, very, very rarely hit a bad ball in. You know, like what I mean by that was he was putting snow on it. Like, even if he was given a high ball, it was a good trajectory ball, you know, that suited the likes of Declan Ryan coming out in front or the inside line coming in front. So
he was a bit before his time at that, wasn't he?
Yeah, he just was so intelligent, I suppose. And as I said, a delightful striker too. And generally, try to strike the ball on the front foot, you know, whereas probably a lot of hurlers back then and even into the mid-noughties still struck the ball on the back foot, you know, whereas he probably changed that dynamic a little bit. And very, very intelligent, said, and real selfless type of hurler. But brilliant. Look again, we talk about dream days, captain your team to win that Ireland, man the match, 5 points, big performance, you know. So Tommy Dunn, you know, that's definitely a day I'm sure he looks back on really, really fondly, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So Kevin Broderick, there's really big three here. There's 3 nominations, if we're being honest. Like, Liam Hodgins was very good as well, but wasn't on the other level. Philip Marathot had an excellent second half. You know, you could make a case for one or two other fellas who played well, but I don't think anybody played on the level. Anybody is in the mix outside of Tommy Dunn, Kevin Broderick and Mark O'Leary. And Broderick was just like, I mean, he had 3 different lads marking him. He had Corcoran, he had Kelly, and then another sub.
Micheál
Ryan came on him. And none of them could tie him up. But it's impossible to tie Broderick up because he was so fast and he was like a light onto breaking ball. And like, you'd imagine when you're marking someone, like, it's hard to mark them. Breaking ball can land anywhere. It's just Broderick seemed to be on it so fast that it's hard to man mark a lad who, before he actually gets on the ball, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I sort of described him as a little rabbit buzzing around the place, you know, so he was right. I thought, in fairness to Broderick, he worked his way into the game really well at the start.
Yeah.
Went deep, won ball and delivered it. You know, Eamon Corcoran didn't follow him, sat in the pocket, probably felt that, you know, he's not doing any damage if he's out the field that far. But what it allowed Broderick to do was to work his way into the game, get on ball, build up his confidence, and then come late, you know, come with runs from deep. And, you know, that way he was able to lose no matter who his marker was. And, you know, just then got himself into that kind of unstoppable force, you know, sniped a couple of points in the first half, but, you know, his easiest chance, as you said, was the one he missed.
Yeah.
Probably rushed the shot a little bit and again struck the ball inside himself.
He stopped as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he stopped as well. Whereas if he'd have carried it, there's no way he'd have been caught, you know. Yeah. So tried to strike fast so he wasn't blocked down or hooked from behind. And, you know, rushed it a little bit. Again, probably one you'd be giving out about. And, you know, as you said, could have got that goal. Can't say should have. I know as a forward, you'll always feel you should have. But
Well,
I put that down more as a save than a miss. You know?
The only thing, like you said, when you're in a position like that and you're giving out to yourself, and like any goalkeeper that rushes out to you, the thing to do is try and go around him. But like, I mean, these things happen so fast that it's just how, like, only the likes of the Gooch Cooper and like maybe Joe Canning in hurling might have the presence of mind at that moment to take a step to the sea, you know what I mean, or Shane Callanan. That's what separates them from the very top players, that they can process the goalie rushing out at them in a second and do the right thing, maybe put it under him or whatever. Broderick kind of put it straight, you know, kind of at him at a decent height.
And that, look, I think you're right. I think he did kind of the right thing, you know. He struck it early. He tried to force Cummins to move, and Cummins did dive at him. But sometimes, as I say, and I mean this, you need a bit of luck. I've been in that position hundreds of times, and it doesn't matter how much experience you have, you might score 90% of them, but there'll always be the occasions you miss it and you're just left kicking yourself afterwards. You know, why didn't I dink it low? Why didn't I move those few yards? So I just think, you know, it was just unfortunate from a Galway perspective, and obviously for Kevin Broderick. But to go back to the major point, I think his performance was excellent. And, you know, if Galway had won that game, he definitely was getting man the match, let's put it that way. Paul Kelly was winged back in 93, and he got man of the match when Kilkenny still won the All-Ireland. I'm sure they had a serious debate that night to whether Kevin Broderick or Tommy Dunn or Mark O'Leary, actually, who deserved it, you know?
Yeah, so Tommy Dunn ended up getting it on the Sunday game that night, is that right?
That's my recollection of it anyway.
Right, okay. So, like, I mean, it's very, very difficult choice here. You know, I probably should have made it before we started talking here on air. Like, I mean, if we're being honest, like, it's going to go from the winning team because, like, Broderick played very well. He also missed 1-1. It's going to come from the winning team, which it always is. So it's between Dunn and Mark O'Leary. And I think Tommy Dunn was flawless right throughout the game and was constantly on the ball.
And I'm going to disagree with you, because I'm going to say, so that we're not accused of always putting the man in the match as our interviewers. And Mark O'Leary scoring 2-1 on big occasions. Tommy Dunn has the official piece of crystal. We'll give him the woolly one.
Okay, we'll give it to Mark O'Leary. Right, but listen, when you look at it, this is how fickle I am with this. I can change my mind like the weather. But I quite like being consistent about giving it to the person who you end up calling. But anyway, to be honest, listen, we'll give Tommy Dunn and Mark O'Leary a joint award here.
You're really sitting on the fence.
Well, to be honest, when you look at Mark, listen, Tommy Dunn is the standout player for me right throughout the game. Tip wouldn't have won it without Mark O'Leary. Like, it's impossible without his... you know, big scores. The two goals were big scores, but his point and the free were just as important at a really important time. So it would be unfair to leave him out. Can we sit in defence on this one?
We'll let you that one.
Right, listen, that's all we've time for. We'll be back next week and we'll review another All-Ireland final. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.